me. Ooh-wee, it's me. Ooh-wee, it's me. I ain't doing nothing but talking shit, so y'all gotta, like, you know, encourage me the whole way along. Ow. I ain't doing nothing but talking shit, so y'all gotta, like, you know, encourage me the whole way along.
And this is the way, the way, the way, the way. We rock the high, the high, the high.
You like them big hairy balls, don't you?
Baby.
I know you're gonna dig this.
Don't touch that dial.
Hey, yo, what's up, man? Listening to a special segment of The Breaks. We're on set here of Law & Order Special Victims Unit with my man Ice-T. We're going to do a little one-to-one and review, or actually let him talk about his upcoming movie
Something From Nothing.
Something From Nothing, The Art of Rap.
Yeah.
Amazing. I saw the trailer. If you haven't seen the trailer, go to YouTube and
I'm going to give you a private screening today.
Yeah, yo, he's going to give me a private screening. So anyway, by the time this airs, I'm going to have the full review, which is going to be dope. I can just tell you, man. If you watch the trailer, it's what is it, like 3 minutes?
Yeah, the trailer's all over the place. Just go to YouTube, push in, you know, lay in The Art of Rap, Ice-T, and you should see the trailer. There's two trailers out there. There was a short trailer early with the Mortal Technique in it,
right.
New trailer. You can tell one from the other.
Yep.
The new one is a bigger production.
Right.
But it's going crazy right now on the net, and the movie hits theaters June 15th.
Right. That's June 15th in L.A.?
No.
Or New York?
National.
June 15th, y'all.
Yeah.
All right. Immortal Technique. I like both trailers. I like that when he goes, if you don't like the way I live, fuck you, or some shit like that, right? I like that. And then the gunshot. I kind of like it, but I also think that I can see how maybe another version would be better because...
Well, you know what it is? The first trailer was the trailer we did before we had funding. When we first started shooting the film, we went around New York and I got a lot of people on the phone and we shot for just one weekend, just grabbing as many people as we can. We edited that down to give the investors the idea of what this movie was about. And with that trailer, we got funding like instantly, and then we came back and started to shoot the film. So
wow.
That was even done before the movie was even made.
Wow.
That was just like we had interviewed maybe 10, 12 people over a weekend. We were running and gunning. And yeah,
that's crazy.
Yeah, that lyric though, that's one of my lyrics. He was busting. That's
okay.
We started off. He was saying lyrics from New Jack Hustler.
Gotcha.
I joined.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Oh well, so now you just blasting my skull open. You did the trailer first. That little trailer,
mm-hmm.
the lower resolution or lower production value trailer, which is pretty much the same as the other one, but right. And then you raised the money to do your film.
Yeah. What happened was initially when I had the idea to do the film, you know, I was just listening to new hip-hop and looking where it's going. And I think if you're really part of the culture of hip-hop, you always try to give back. You always speak highly about hip-hop. It's something that's almost reverent to us. You know, we really are serious about it. But I was like, you know, I can't really make a record that's going to say how I feel. People might read an article. I said, you know, right now, I just felt, since I've been in film so long, been in television, this is my chance to make a movie. So initially, I thought about just having each artist interview themselves on a video camera and then send it to me and I would edit. But then I talked to my manager, George, and he was like, this is a great idea. So we hooked up with a guy named Paul Toogood, who is in Britain, who does a television show about songwriters. And they are, you know, you got to know that when you go to Europe and England, these people look at hip-hop differently.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's a culture.
It's a phenomenon, thing. Yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. So they were like, Ice.
Yeah.
We want to be involved. We got the cameras. We got the editing. We'll come make this into a real movie. So he came over. You know, we went out. We just shot for a weekend and got as many people as we can. He cut a trailer, the first trailer, and took that. And then we got the initial investment we needed to get the helicopter shots to be able to travel to L.A. to Detroit to have.
So that's not even a stock shot of that helicopter above the Empire State Building?
Oh, no. There were only, in the film, there were a few goals and rules set.
Uh-huh.
Rule one was no stock footage.
Whoa.
No stock footage. In the trailer, you see pictures. That's not in the movie. In the movie, there's no stock footage, no pictures, nothing. I didn't want anything in the movie that had ever been seen before.
Huh.
That was rule one.
Hmm.
I'm not going to do a documentary and say, oh, he stole that.
And use some other shit.
No.
Yeah.
We shot everything, all the static shots in New York, all the background shots that we used, we shot that ourselves.
Wow.
Second thing was no music would be played during the rap segments because I wanted people to hear the words. So all rapping in the movie was done a cappella.
Uh-huh.
We asked the rappers just to spit something new or
mm-hmm.
spit something that
mm-hmm.
they hadn't released yet. Some of the raps might be in music by now because it took 2 years
right.
to make a record,
right.
make the movie,
mm-hmm.
but they were all coming raw off the head.
Yeah. Some of it is in the trailer. KRS-One is doing I'm Not MTV, I'm Not, I'm Hip Hop.
Yeah, so we would, and the third thing was our goal was to get into Sundance. That was it. We never thought we'd make it in the movie theaters. The artistic bar was set at if we could make a movie that would be accepted into Sundance.
Which, by the way, congratulations.
Yeah.
My wife and I had a movie, went to Sundance.
Yeah.
A big deal.
Big deal.
A big deal. And the fact that it's also a movie, I guess a movie about a subject matter that, you know, we were talking about this the other day, has so many different versions of different opinions and different ways of looking at it and stuff like that. And I believe when you were telling me the other day was that you wanted to create a movie about the craft of rapping, not the flashy BS crap or whatever, but just like, you know, the craft as an artist.
Well, you know what it is I've been in the business now over 20 years, and you know, I've done quite a few albums, and when I get interviewed, no one really asks how do you do it. No one asks about the how do you create the rhyme. They'll ask about the topics,
right?
They'll ask about
how are the bitches?
You, yeah, how the bitches? What kind of car you bought? Who don't you like?
How much money you make?
Yeah, who you got beef with?
Yeah.
You know that dumb shit.
Yeah,
why
yeah.
You West Coast? How you feel?
Right.
Hey, don't you? You know, try to create bullshit.
Right.
But no one says, well, when you're riding the run, where's your head? How are you feeling?
Mm-hmm.
What's your emotional situation? Do you do it with the music, without the music?
Mm-hmm.
Nobody asks those questions.
Mm-hmm.
So that kind of to me, makes me feel like people don't really
understand the process of it.
They don't think it's a process.
Right.
They don't think it's a process.
Right.
Because they've seen rappers freestyle, they just think, you know.
I think Salt says that, right? Is that Salt?
Yeah.
She goes, they just think we just talk over music.
Absolutely.
Right.
And people will go, okay, you got to do make another album. Go shit it out. You know, like, it just comes from nowhere, and they don't know that you might have to labor over a song for hours.
It's a craft. It's an art.
Yeah.
It's an art form.
To get it right.
Which started from nothing. Because it evolved from the South Bronx battling. I mean, we all have our own historical attachments to whatever
well,
point.
It all started. I mean, I know exactly how it started. But, you know, there were people speaking in rhyme prior to hip-hop as we know it. You can go into Gil Scott-Heron, Last Poets. You know, so the act of saying street poetry has been around long before I was alive.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the toasting of the players and all this stuff of that nature. But actually connecting rhymes to beats really happened by the first starting off with the DJs who found ways to use the breakdowns of records. And they would take the breakdowns of records and spin them back and forth using a mixer.
Right.
Really, the invention of the mixer is what really was the birth of hip-hop.
The bridge.
Yeah, of we know. And what happened was DJs would find the part of the record that broke down. That would be the part without the singing.
The break.
The break, which your show is about.
And just
play the
prolong
break.
The break.
Now, no one necessarily knew where these breaks were coming from because the DJs would go to great lengths to disguise it. They would take the records and cover up the labels because didn't know they spinning Steve Miller Band. You didn't know they're spinning Aerosmith because that was the power of the DJ who had the better breaks. Now, the DJ would say, here, somebody get on the mic and tell everybody how great I am.
Right.
Okay, so now this becomes the MC. That's why early rap, all the raps were about the DJ, because the DJ owned the system and he was allowing you to say something.
Love that.
And you had to say something about me.
Right.
Okay, but then the MC got slick and started to say stuff about himself. And it's like, yeah, Grandmaster Flash is this, but I'm Cowboy. And next thing you know, they start talking about themselves.
Right.
And that was the birth of the MC, in a way, kind of trying to steal the show from the DJ.
Right.
Now, there were kids that would dance to this music, and they were basically called break dancers. They danced to the breaks of music. People think break dance means break your leg. No, it means you dance to the breaks or the B-boys, you know. So now you've got this art form of people just saying basically party rhymes, and people like Melly Mel, people like Super Rhymes, and people like that started to take this this chance to be on the mic and tell their own stories, and start to discover that there was more that you could do over the beat than just hype the DJ.
You did it.
Yeah, after one MC would do it, another MC would get up and say, well, he was good, but I'm a little bit better. And by last night, I was with his sister, and everybody would laugh. And now this is where the battle started to come in. Okay, you just talked about me. So this is where the competitive nature of hip-hop comes, because whose DJ was better, whose crew was better, whose neighborhood was better, whose graffiti are, and that's...
So you basically described the early stages of the evolution
of
hip-hop, basically. So you got the DJ who, at a certain point, just playing music. Somebody comes up with the mixer. A DJ decides to just match break beats and prolong that part of the record.
Turn it into an instrumental.
Instrumental that prolongs that part of the record that makes you want to get down, right? Basically, gets an MC who starts talking about the DJ. Look how bad my man is. And then the MC starts boasting about himself. Then MCs start boasting about themselves and how good they are against other MCs. And bam, there we go. We could fast forward into different styles, different crews, and blah blah.
And you know, one of the people who really taught me a lot or inspired me to rap was Melly Mel. Because, and he's in the film, it's because when he did The Message and Beat Street Breakdown, prior to that, I really kind of thought rap was one-dimensional. I really didn't understand how deep you could go with it. I was just like, okay, you can rap parties, and when I heard The Message, I'm like, you could take this far. You know, when he started talking about Mussolini and...
When did you hear The Message? That was, what, 83?
Yeah, well, I was in the rap, and I was having fun with it, but I didn't realize it could be serious. You know, because no one had ever took it and made...
Intellectual.
Serious. Yeah, intellectual. And that's when I was like, oh, there's no limits to this.
You know, there's a lot about you, man. I was just watching a clip of you and Arsenio Hall back in 1990 where you're breaking down how... The reason I watch is because you say in a Billboard interview about your movie that you say rap saved your life.
Yeah.
So I wanted to ask, well, how did rap save your life, Ice? You know, but I just start searching, and there's your interview with Arsenio, and you talk about how, you know, you weren't directly involved with gang violence per se, but you were involved
in close to it,
and then you were a hustler, and you thought, man, I don't need to be making that type of money. I'm making my own shit. And then eventually you realize, no, I want to be, everyone wants to be here in front of us. This is where you really want to be, making the real money. And that you, the way you were describing it was that you wanted to show the kids or teach the kids that, I forgot what we use, the weapon or
the lethal weapon
is your mind. Which is basically what you're saying, in essence, of your eye-opening experience with Melly Mel and them cats.
Well, it's just like, you know, you can decide to say nothing or you can decide to say something. And that's just the difference in, you know, to me, pop music and you know, the more, the deeper rap of somebody like a Mos Def or somebody like an Ice Cube or a Chuck D or a KRS-One. I think all the great rappers, the ones that you put great by their name, whether it's Rakim, they said something. There was something you would walk away from with from that music, you know, whether it was Dougie Fresh just telling you to reach higher or do something, it inspired you to do something else versus I'm the baddest motherfucker.
Right.
Now, what I did with rap was I decided to tell tales of street life and violence and crime, which you kind of had their own little morals at the end of them. They were stories that were based around. It might seem fun, but in most of my records, I ended up dead from the lifestyle that I portrayed. And this was my way of telling cats, hustling might seem cool, but it's no real retirement in it.
Right, you know? Right.
And that was just what, that's what, that was the true story that I had lived.
Right. It's a dead-end street, basically.
But it's a dead-end street that looks like you really want to be on it.
Yeah, right. which still, I mean, yeah. your movie's so brilliant for many, many levels. First of all, you're one of these cats that, like, in the 90s, like, see, I from the East Coast, growing up in the Bronx with Grandmaster Flash, Furious Five, Treacherous Three, right. Fearless Four, blah, 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 Battles in the Bronx, all right. That shit, to the level when you start, when you're talking about, was like late 80s, early 90s, where now the rappers started talking about their point of views of their life, and they were telling their own stories and different, you know, some of them are corny raps, you know, Houdini would rap about some crazy shit, Beastie Boys would rap about some, you know, whatever. Nothing really, of any importance per se, other than melody, and then we got into, you know, knowledgeable rap, and then different styles with different knowledge. You know what I mean? It's just.
But you know, I think the thing at the end of the day is like everybody is coming from an experience, and it all was valuable. I think you know. People always say to me, like, well, who should be saying things that are important? I'm like, those people that have important thoughts. I don't think it's necessary for you to go out and necessarily make something that's real prolific if it's not in you. But then some of the greatest hip-hop was just fun.
Right.
Like you mentioned the Beastie Boys, but to me, you know, License to Ill might be one of the greatest hip-hop ever.
Totally.
Because it's just wild and it's fun.
It's fun.
And it's exciting. But they have the ability, you knew, like, whatever they wanted to say. You know, we got to fight for your right to party. Really is a very interesting song because
right.
They're saying something. They're saying, you know, we got the right to
have fun. Right.
I just think that in that era of hip-hop, you know, the kids really were songwriters. You know, even whether Houdini's singing The Freaks Come Out at Night, it's still a song.
No, definitely.
You're writing a song.
Definitely.
And I just think that there's so many dimensions of it. And I just wanted to hit a reset button on hip-hop and let people know that there's a lot of forms of rap, but all of this stuff is art. Art is anything which it takes skill to do. But that does not mean anyone can just pick up the mic and just do art. You know, you have to take the time to learn a skill set.
You may be gifted, but then you still have to work and polish it.
Yes.
And work at it and
yes.
Polish it. Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, a point well made there. No, but you're right. It was all of the early rap that came about, very entertaining. They were all songs. But what I'm interested in more is, like, your movie now just jumps, in, from my opinion, to, like, the more advanced, or where hip-hop is, or where hip-hop has evolved into. And then you have all these, like, master cats, you know what I mean? And they're all given their own insight as to their own craft and their own how they do it.
When I did the movie, I just went to my address book, and fortunately, you know, because of my personality, I drew in certain people that wanted to be my friends and my journeys. You know, I was cool with Bun B and Pimp C from UGK. You know, I was fortunate enough to meet people like Common along the way. these certain rappers, it's like if you're in the room with them and they know you're there, they'll go out the other door if they're not feeling you. They're not going to become your friend.
No, no, no.
When I go to my book and I happen to know all these people, whether it's Rakim or Chino XL or Eminem, these have become my friends. So I was in a situation where, you know, I just made a call and I said, well, you know, there's no way in the world I could get every MC in this movie. So
that's funny. That's one of the questions I had.
People will say, you know, if you don't see your favorite MC, that's because this movie's not about your favorite
MC.
It's about Ice-T's favorite MCs.
Or the MCs that may have been available to Ice-T or open to.
Well, you gotta understand, if you only have 90 minutes in a movie, you can't have 100 people.
100?
Yeah.
How many MCs are there?
You got something like 48 people.
But I'm saying there's thousands of MCs,
right? So I also told people, I said, well, if your favorite rapper's not in the movie, trust me, your favorite rapper's favorite rapper is in the movie.
Right, I like that. Well, I mean, see, back to like the evolution of my experience. So like hip hop started changing a little bit for me, or rapping, like around A Tribe Called Quest when they came out, mm-hmm. and Third Bass when they started using samples of like obscure like R&B tunes and stuff like that.
Well, no, you know what really changed hip hop really was the influx of the internet and the internet making music easily available and free. And then what happened, because prior to that there was an underground hip hop and people would go to the record store and actually buy records. Now all of a sudden it becomes an internet thing where you can just pick up records or even either steal music. Mm. So the only way you can get promoted now is to be radio. So what happens is radio lays out a format of this is what we want, and the rappers fall in line and do what the radio wants. When you got to remember that early hip hop was against radio. It wouldn't do what the radio wanted.
Right, right.
So now once you have to get in radio rotation nowadays to sell a big number of records, you're going to get homogenized hip hop. You're going to get music that the radio wants to play, which is something that's not aggressive, that's not about anything, that's not about any political issues or views. It's something that's very simple and easy for radio play. Because now if you say underground, that means free. That means free. But it was funny, I did an interview with a girl the other day. She was like 21. And I said, you know, I sold a lot of records. You know, almost 20 million records. But people went to the record store. And she said, what's a record store?
That's crazy.
And I said, like Tower, oh yeah, that's out. Warehouse, that's gone.
You don't even have a reference.
She said to me, like Best Buy? And I said, well, Best Buy is really trying to sell a refrigerator.
Right.
You know?
And an air conditioner.
Yeah, yeah.
And a toothbrush.
So now
that's a trip, man.
You know, it's a different game. So you also have the end of the album game.
Right, right, right.
People don't buy albums.
No,
buy singles.
No, right.
Now, if you happen to be a radio MC who's on constant rotation, you can sell your records. You know, you can sell albums. But in order to get in that constant rotation, you're going to have to do a radio record. And that means, and I'm not here to diss anybody that does it, but that means you might have to have Rihanna sing on the record, or you might have to have Katy Perry on the record, or some pop artist.
Someone that's going to make it more digestible for the general public, for the masses.
Absolutely.
Which is fine. I mean, that's commerce.
That's it. But what I'm saying is that is a small portion of hip-hop.
Right.
Hip-hop, that's like 10% of hip-hop, 90%. Is other types of hip-hop.
Mm-hmm.
And if the masses only know about what they're hearing on the radio,
right.
They'll never really research.
Which is one of the most amazing things of what you just said about the internet is that you don't have to have a record label. You don't have to. You can have no money, and you can just upload your MP3, you know, onto. You can even, I believe you could even just sell it. Maybe not on iTunes or whatever, but you can publish your own music and sell it, and people could buy it from you.
But there's a pro and a con to that. That means anybody can make a record. Which means there's no bar. See, there used to be like you had to get to a label and some A&R, someone had to accept you. So it was a degree of difficulty to even be able to make a record. So, you know, there was at least some gatekeeper there saying,
right, right.
Now anybody can make a record, anybody can shoot a video. So it dilutes dilutes it so much that you're like, I don't want to hear it because most of the stuff I'm hearing.
Right. It's oversaturated bullshit. I understand.
Right. So it's really hard to separate.
Yeah.
The people that have put the time
right.
in.
Right. So now it's a wide range of freedom. There are no gatekeepers, but then
it's kind of like if you were able to go to the it's kind of like you were able to go to Madison Square Garden tonight, right? But it was a pickup game. It's right. like there was no Lakers, there was no Knicks, there were no experts on the field.
Right.
It was just anybody could play. Any night at any arena.
I'd hope you get paid to be there.
It would be very interesting, but that's kind of like what you got in the music scene. It's like a big pickup game.
Right,
like
no one
knows where the best are.
Right.
You know, so there has to be a degree of difficulty. So when you go to see the experts or the people that made it past some level.
But here's the flip of that. Now that there's more opportunity for just anybody to make music, wouldn't that also mean that there's more opportunity for those diamonds in the rough to pop out? Because if you look at the history of the hip hop, I mean, this book I'm reading, which I'd love to talk about, How to Recognize Beach, the History of the Vocoder into Hip-Hop, mm-hmm. which is genius. But there's a gazillion records. And I was going through the discography of this and going on YouTube and listening to all these fucking records. And I'm thinking, wow, some of these records are fucking whack, but they're genius.
Yeah. I mean, it's a like I say, it's a double-edged sword.
Right.
Yeah, true. Anybody can sit at home and they can make their records and stuff and they can put it out. But now, will they actually be able to make a living off of that? Is it just a point now where music is free and nobody eats off of
right.
it and all of us sing? That might be the day you're coming to, because right now, honestly, if you really look in the rap business, there's probably less than 40 people eating.
Right, right.
You know?
Right.
It's probably, you know, it's a small tree of
right.
people that are actually making money. Now, there's millions of rappers and millions
mm-hmm,
of people
mm-hmm,
out there
mm-hmm.
dropping albums after albums after
right.
albums. I actually stopped making records and I'm just like, you know, now if I make a record, I just give it away because...
Because you're Ice T, because you don't give a fuck.
Well, it's just not really feasible to think that you're going to really make a lot of money off of records unless you're willing to do radio music.
Right, right, right.
If you have an artist and he's not really ready to do radio, then you might as well forget about it.
So it still goes back to the old, old school way of selling music, the radio. If you don't get airplay on the radio, forget it. You're never going to make
see,
it.
See, we had it for a minute and it was good. Like, you know, when Master P and everybody was taking in Ghetto Boys, we wasn't getting played on the radio.
Right.
That's because the culture was new and people were looking out and seeking out it. And you know, my movie's not really totally based on that. It's just more about that was the initial feeling that made me wanna
search out that.
Say, kind of like a lot of you people right now are yelling Tupac, but you've never seen him perform.
Right.
You don't even know what it is.
Right.
You know, maybe let me give you a taste of what it is that we are so passionate about and the vibe and the feeling of it. And maybe, you know, the new cats might get it and be re-inspired to do something great.
So, going back to your movie, because the craft of the rap game. Let me go back to, you said you went into your phone book to see how many rappers or who many rappers you could get to come in your movie. Did you have any? This might be a little crazy, but did you have any difficulty with some guys that you thought might be in it?
No, not really. Everybody was willing. It was just getting
the timing
schedule.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because I had a camera crew from London. You got myself, who's on a television show, you know, every day. And, Then you have to get the artists, and the artists are busy. They're touring, they're traveling. So to get the logistics down, it's difficult.
Right, right. Absolutely.
Sometimes we would try 1 week, and it might take 2 weeks to get them on point, and you call them back, oh, man, they're in Africa right now.
Right, right, right. Timing, man.
Yeah, so, but no one was really difficult. Everybody rolled with the punches because people knew this was an important film.
Right. So in your search for the craft of the rap, did you discover anything new that you didn't, that you weren't aware of, or that you didn't think of?
Some people have ill techniques, you know what I'm saying? I mean, I've been in so many studios with so many people, I think I've seen every technique available. I've seen the drunk technique. The drunk technique. King T was mad. He had to be always a certain level of drunk to rap, right?
Toxic. He had to be a little lit.
Too lit, he couldn't rap.
Right.
Too not lit, he wasn't.
He's too shy.
He was not hitting his shit. Right. I mean, I've seen rappers like down a whole like pint of liquor, strip damn near to their drawers, take the shoes off and rap. I've seen people do all kind of stuff to get it going. I've seen people that, you know, only write the words that rhyme on the paper. I've seen all kinds of different.
So some of that shit actually shocked you in a way, yeah?
Well, like even in the movie, Mortal Technique says that when he gets ready to write, sometimes he'll make himself physically hungry, like, and he'll go into the gym and hit the bag and try to make himself uncomfortable.
Huh.
You know? Well, they say art is pain.
Huh.
So sometimes you got to get yourself into this zone, but it's all kind of techniques. It's all kinds of techniques. But it was just great for me to hear the passion some of the rappers, well, all of them have for the art.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. So I know you said in one of your, I think maybe in the trailer, one of your interviews, you said that you came up with 15 questions that you asked each rapper. What were some of those 15 questions, like some of them that like pop out of your head that were really important?
I would ask them all to say a rhyme that stuck in their head by another rapper. You know, that all people in hip-hop have a rhyme stuck in their head. I would say that rap is a masterpiece, but nobody painted it all. What was your stroke on the canvas that wasn't there? You know,
so what contribution did they put into the main?
You feel you did that was different. Why do you think hip hop not respected like jazz and the blues? If you were going to teach a rapper, what would be the first lesson you would teach them to come into the game? If you were going to have a protege, just gonna come up off of you. What makes a rapper great in your eyes? What contributes whackness?
Whack, I love that word. People don't use that word anymore. That's whack.
That's a hip-hop word. That's the default word that rappers go to, whack. You know?
People don't use that word anymore. That shit is whack.
Yeah, whack. No, we use it. Trust me.
Yeah, that shit is... That's hilarious. Oh, shit. So, no, those are some pretty... Okay, so do you not think that hip-hop is not well-respected as jazz?
Well, the thing of it is where we came from way with that is it's like, who are we looking for from the respect? Usually this respect you're seeking is from the mainstream, but then it's a counterculture. You know, it's not a mainstream. This isn't opera. This isn't something that the mainstream would accept. So,
but you got to say now, right?
Right.
From like
this moment.
25 years from more or less from where it started.
Well, that's
it has to have the same amount of respect.
Nah, squares, they're not going to respect it. So it's more or less like a lot of the rappers said, well, it's too new.
Huh. No, when I was thinking about interviewing you, I was thinking of being in my guidance counselor's office in 1981. Mm-hmm. And I remember Miss Burson, old Jewish lady, she looked out for me. And this black mom and her son came in. And she was like, Miss Burson, I don't understand. All my son wants to do is rap, you know. And I remember thinking, this shit is going to have to go away. This, you know, back in 81, it's got to go away. As years went by, 10 years go by, you realize it's not going away. It's evolving. It's changing.
The thing of it is, it's just too new. It's just too
You still think it's too new?
Absolutely, it's too new. I mean, put it like this. Like, you take somebody like the Beatles.
Mm-hmm.
And when they came, everybody, they were condemned and hated by mm-hmm. the parents mm-hmm. and everything.
Mm-hmm.
But now, I mean, when you speak of John Lennon, people talk of him in religious terms. You
right.
know, it's like, wow, these are the same people that people really despised and hated.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So it's just too new. And when you look back on it, and see, the thing of it is, rap molded a lot of people. I mean, I go into CEO's offices now, and they're like, man, in my college here, yeah. man, that's all I look. So when a lot of these people, you know, become adults, and then you look back on it in 50 years.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I honestly believe Barack Obama is the first hip-hop president.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that.
Because not that he listened to rap, but the voters that put him in were Public Enemy and Ice-T fans when they were young.
Mm.
Now they're in their 30s. That's who voted.
Mm.
So a lot of the walls that wouldn't allow the black president were brought down by hip-hop.
Mm.
So, you know, you won't understand the fallout of it for a few more, you know, 20, 30, 40
gotcha,
years.
Gotcha.
But they'll look back and they'll say, wow, remember how it was pre this? And then what happened after it?
Mm.
So, you know, but like I say, when you asking for respect, who are you asking it from? In other words, someone says, well, you're not respected, but I'm like, well, who am I looking for this respect from? People I never liked in the first place?
Right.
I get respect from the people I wanted it from.
Right, right.
My peers. So we love hip-hop, and that's all that should matter.
Right, right. Well, I mean, that's a mouthful, man. That's okay. One of the funny moments for me in the trailer is at the end. Mm-hmm. There's this dude. You're interviewing Mos Def.
No. I think the guy that walked up in the camera.
Yeah.
That's Q-Tip.
Q-Tip. So I love that shit because my man, this is New York City.
Oh, we had millions of those spaces.
My man comes out of nowhere and shit, and he starts interrupting. And you tell him, my man, you see the camera right
there? We're doing an interview. Dude just walks right in the middle of the interview and starts talking. But that happens on Law and Order.
Of course.
On Law and Order, if I'm out in the street shooting, a guy just walk right past the PA and give me a dap in the middle of the scene. I'm out there doing something. And people don't,
you're working, man.
People don't see that. They don't care. This is New York. People are oblivious.
But they don't. In all fairness, they're not aware, and they don't understand the fact that you're working.
Yeah, no.
You know what I mean? You're not Ice-T hanging out on the corner chilling, bullshitting.
Like, looks like it,
right?
You're working. There go my man. I'm gonna go say hi. Right?
Yeah. What's up? You're working though, but that shit was hilarious because you were like, yo, my man, you see the team, you see the camera on, keep it moving. It was
love is love.
I loved it. Yeah. I loved it. I thought that was hilarious. All right, so tell us again, the movie opens up in Los Angeles.
We have a premiere in Los Angeles.
When is that?
June 5th.
Is that open to the public? Or
no, that's going to be a private
screen.
They're going to give away tickets on the radio.
On the radio, so you got to listen to the local radio stations. That's June 5th.
Yeah, and June 12th out here in New York.
And then it opens generally nationwide 15th. The 15th of June.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. So let's we're going to wish you a lot of luck with that.
Yeah. Basically, and anybody out there, you know, that wants to see the trailer, go to the trailer. If you want to stay with updates, go to theartofrap.com. That's a website, or just follow me on Twitter at Final Level.
Final Level and theartofrap.com. We'll make sure we definitely.
Yeah, that's a website with all the updates.
We'll prop that up until the opening of the movie.
Cool.
All right.
You ready to go see the movie?
I'm going to go see the movie like.
Right now.
Right now.
This is Ice-T, and you're listening to The Breaks. Stay tuned.
like, you know, encouraged me the whole way along. Ow. I ain't doing nothing but talking shit. So y'all gotta, like, you know, encourage me to...